This morning, I want to talk to you about models. Models. No, not that kind of a model. Rita, are you playing games on me? No, I want to talk to you about a different kind of model. You know, models that group us or categorize us into certain groups, categories, or associations. Specifically, I want to look this morning at two models, one of which we will call the tribal or the family model, and the other we'll call the association or the club model. Let me explain to you first the tribal or family model. It is simply that you are born into a family. You're born into a family. After you join that family, somebody in that family establishes some rules. They don't kick you out if you ignore the rules because you are part of the family. They give you those rules, though, to just kind of help you along the way. You know, if you stay within the reference of those rules, you will be fine. When you're a kid, in your family, you have certain rules. After you go to the bathroom, you gotta wash your hands. Let's see. You always gotta be neat in a appearance. That's right. And if you're not neat in appearance, you better be headed towards the bathroom to make sure that you are neat in appearance. You need to be respectful of other people. Maybe those rules change a little bit as we get a little older. You know, I remember bedtime at 8 o'clock, bedtime at 9 o'clock, bedtime at 10 o'clock. Every few years that expanded. And with that, you got much more freedom and much more time on your hands. I remember as a youngster, back in the days when they had what they called blue laws. Do any of you remember blue laws? Okay. They basically said you didn't open your business on Sunday, that's right. And so, you didn't open your business on Sunday. But I remember as a youngster, about 6, 7, 8 years old, my dad was a merchant in a small town of Ambridge out near Pittsburgh. And he had something he had to do or papers that he needed to go over for Monday. So we rode up to Ambridge that day on a Sunday. And we walked into the store, and all the lights were out. And he said, I got to go get my things and check on a couple things. But you guys just do your thing, and we'll catch up in a few minutes. And so my mom went off to wherever she was going to look for things. And my sister went off to wherever she was going to go look at things. And I went over to the candy counter. Back in the day, when you remember the candy counters where they had the candy in the shelf and it was covered by glass? Well, I didn't come to just look. I came to sample. All right. And so I sneak in there. And my dad had quietly snuck back up to the candy counter. And all of a sudden, I'm coming out from behind the candy counter trying to get everything eaten. And I'm like, no. And my dad said, what are you doing? And I'm like, give me a minute. I wasn't sure I'd stay in the family or tribal model after that. I didn't know if I'd get out of the store that day. But you get a picture. I wandered off into that candy section. I helped myself, and now my dad was reminding me of the family rules of respecting others. All that goes with that. The other model is the club or the association model. And basically what they do is they give you a list of rules. And they ask you to read those rules and you agree to live by them, and then you can get into the club. That's right. A club or an association. You break the rules, you are out of the club. You keep the rules, you're fine. So, my wife and I belong to an association or a club. It's called BJ's. And you give them your $45 or whatever it is now a year, and you get a membership into that club. They get you, you can shop in their big grocery department store. They give you, can buy discounted gas. You get eyeglasses there. You get large portions of meat that they'll even cut down for you. The list goes on and on and on. That's right. One of the things that they do is they put travel packages together at discounted prices. Now, I don't know, but I assume that if you go on one of those trips, you are told you've got to follow the rules on their trips. And if word gets back to corporate that you didn't follow the rules, you're... You steal from one of their stores, you're... My wife and I are going to go on one of their trips in a couple of weeks, and so we're not going to test that. We're going to try to obey the rules and keep our membership. So the tribal model says, because I have rules, I'm in. I'm given rules to keep me functioning smoothly within the tribe. The association says, I am given rules to have and to keep in order to stay in the association. Two different types of group. But you know what? That applies not just to our work and our family. That applies not just to our sporting clubs. It doesn't apply just to our women's clubs or men's clubs, fraternities, sororities. It also deals with our faith. Maybe you were told what your faith journey was to be like, but it never felt like a tribal or family model. Or maybe you were just always told to keep the rules and keep your mouth shut. Some of you would say, that's all I ever heard. Rules, 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 and kind of got old real quick. But where do rules come in as we think about our own relationship with God? Where do rules come in as we think about how we work that relationship out? What model would you most identify with when it comes to this question, when rules come into play? To explore this, it seems best to go back to one of the oldest sets of rules ever given on the face of this planet. It applies those rules to Judaism, to Christianity, and to Islam. These rules are called the Ten Commandments. Exodus chapter 20. Laws given by God to Moses around 1446 BC. Now, a little backdrop here. All of these religions that we just named, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, all trace their origins back to one person whose name was Abraham. God makes Abraham a promise. He says, listen, I'm going to make you a father of a great nation. Abraham thinks that sounds pretty good, but there's a problem. His wife Sarai is barren, and they are both very old. So God is saying, I am going to make you a great a nation, Abraham. And they're sitting back there thinking, okay, but we're a little bit too old for this. And God says, I'm going to make you a great nation. You just realize this. Trust me. So they do. Except they decide to help God out a little bit. Sarah has a servant. Her name was? Go ahead, give him the answer.
Hagar,
right. And so she says, well, you know, Abraham, you're old, I'm old, I can't have children. But listen, my servant girl is much younger and much, you know, prettier. And why don't you take her, do what you need to do. She'll have a baby, and then that will become my baby, and we will have hopefully a son. So Abraham does what his wife tells him to do. He takes Hagar, he does what he needs to do, and they have a little boy. His name is Ishmael. And while all this is going on and all this excitement, Sarah miraculously has a son, and his name is Isaac. Do you know what Isaac means in the Hebrew? Of course. 90-some-odd-year-old mom? Of course you're going to laugh. Laughter. So she has this boy, Isaac, and all three, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, find their way back in history to Abraham. Now, Isaac has a son. His name is? And Jacob has 12 sons. You've heard of them. Jacob's name became? And his 12 sons became the? 12 tribes of Israel. You've heard about them. Jacob would call Israel, have these sons. And one of his favorite, or his most favorite son, was Joseph, who was hated by his brothers. The brothers actually sell Joseph to the Egyptians as a slave. And there he goes on this wonderful journey where he rises to power, second only to the Pharaoh. And while he is there, he is in power. He's number two in the land, but the Egyptians have a famine. But Joseph had been smart enough to plan for that famine. In fact, he had foretold it to the Egyptians, so they also planned. And when the time of the famine comes, they open their doors to the rest of the nations of the world. And one of the families that come to Egypt is Joseph's brothers, the 12, what we would later know as the tribes of Israel. And Egypt opens its doors. Joseph's brothers' families come in, and eventually they're reunited. He brings his entire family to Egypt. They settle there. And what eventually happens is this kind of small group of Israelites starts to grow and grow and grow. The Bible tells us that years after Joseph passes, years after this Pharaoh, the Egyptians realize, hey, these Israelites are getting to be a pretty good-sized group. We need to do something. And Pharaoh says, let's just make them slaves. And for 400 years, they are in slavery. They simply do what they are told. And they have no freedoms and no rights. 400 years later, Moses arrives and says, what does he say?
Let my people go.
Let my people go. To which Pharaoh says, no. No way. And Pharaoh looks at Moses and says, no. And Moses says, okay, is that your final answer? And the king, and Pharaoh says, yeah. And Moses says, okay. And so he goes away. Nature goes crazy. There's locusts. There's frogs. The waterways are infected. The economy fails. And it all leads Pharaoh to eventually change his mind. In fact, there was one last kind of killer punch. God cast a disease over the nation of Egypt. He tells the Israelites, I want you to take a lamb. I want you to slaughter it. I want you to take the blood and put it around your doorpost. And I'm going to send the angel of death through all the communities of Egypt. But if you stay in your homes covered by the blood, you'll be fine. Go immediately. Just go and do it. And they're like, well, what? Why do we want to do that? Why would we? I just built my house and I painted it yellow. Now you want me to paint the doorpost red? Yeah. And they couldn't understand what God was asking them to do. Do you ever get that way where you feel God is asking you something to do and you can't understand why? Death comes over Egypt. The firstborn in the Egyptian households are killed. But the Israelites remain. And God says, get them out of there. Go right away. And the Pharaoh says, listen, take all your stuff and get out. And if you need anything from us, you just help yourself to what we have. Just go away. 3 weeks later, they get to Mount Sinai. And God says, I want you to listen to me. Because what I am going to say to you is so vitally important. Chapter 20, verses 1 and 2. I am the Lord your God. I am the Lord your God. I am the Lord your God. Think about that. The Israelites, well, how did that happen? Really, what's going on? We were 400 years in slavery. You show up. We see all these miracles. We're released from slavery. And now you're saying you're our God and we're your people. How did that work? And he continues, he said, I am the Lord your, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. Basically, God is saying, hey, I have bought you out of slavery. You have done nothing. You have done nothing, and I have done so much for you. I am the Lord who stepped into your darkest moment. I'm the Lord who, when you had no hope, I ushered you out of Egypt. I performed miraculous signs. People, you are right. You came into this with nothing, and I did everything. And we just need to establish it front up. I am your and you are my people. Then we'll talk about what I really want from you going forward. Now the Israelites, when they were still in Egypt, did hear from God one time. It was right before that last miracle, that last plague, that last kind of knocked the last punch out of the Egyptians. When he had said to Moses, you tell those people to kill a lamb, and I want you to cover the blood of your doorposts with the blood of that lamb for protection. And I'm going to send this angel of death. And of course, while this is all going on, they're thinking, why are we doing this? Why do we need to do this? And God said to them, just trust me. Just trust me. The next day, the angel of death has passed over all of Egypt. The Israelites are spared. Moses says, we're leaving. Never will we come back. Take what we have and take anything you want from the Egyptians. God said, just trust me and I'll spare you. 3 weeks later, they're at Mount Sinai. And God gives these instructions. He said, listen, we are a family. We are a family, and I will set some rules for you. They didn't know how to make decisions. They had been in slavery for 400 years. They didn't know how to treat each other. And God says, I will give you rules to follow that you may live and live well. And so he starts out, you shall have no other gods before me. To which the people said, is that it? Let's go. Let me get this straight. We came out of Egypt. You brought us out. You embarrassed Pharaoh. You destroyed the Egyptian economy. You take us as your people, and all you ask is that we put no other gods before you. Where do we sign up? The point God is making as he stands at Mount Sinai with the people is the Ten Commandments are not are a confirmation of the family relationship. It is not a condition of the relationship. God is saying, I am giving you rules to live by. Kind of think of them as guardrails. If you live within the guardrails, your life will be there is a road, 74, as you're going from Dillsburg to Carlisle. And there is a little waterway. I think it's the Yellow Breeches. And it is, okay. And there is a guardrail to go over to get from the Dillsburg side to the Carlisle side. And I noticed that recently those guardrails have somebody wanted just to get to see something that looked kind of tantalizing. Yeah. And sometimes we get that way in life, don't we? We stray and we kind of hit the guardrails. Maybe it's a cliff we want to look over. Maybe it's a highway we want to look over. But we are encouraged, we're told to stay within the guardrails to keep us protected from danger. And God says, this is not an association. This is not a club. With God, relationship precedes rules, and God opts for the family model. It's not like he says, listen, I'm going to give you 10 rules. If you keep 8 of them, you can stay in the club. But if you only get 5 of them, we're going to have a talk and maybe I'll have to get some new members. So when you think of commandments and the 10 commandments, don't think of them so much as do's and don'ts, but think of them as guardrails. Guardrails show up where there's danger. And God is saying, I want you, my children, simply to trust in me. I'll give you some guardrails, but understand they are to restrict you because I love you and I want you to live life to its fullest. Where did we start this? With Abraham. And you know what God told Abraham? I'm going to start all over, okay, from the very beginning. What did he say? Trust me, that's right. He gets to Moses. And Moses, you're ruling these people, you know, you're kind of barking the orders out. I want you to tell them too. And then Jesus Christ shows up about 1,500 years later. And what does he tell the people? If you've been coming for the last 8 weeks and you don't know, I'm going to really be... I got the big Bible out. I'll hit you over the head. What did Jesus say time and time and time and time and time again? Before he healed anybody, before, you know, he taught, what did he say? Trust me. John, one of Jesus' beloved followers, writes these words in 1 John. Was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a clear witness to testify to the light so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light. The true light, which enlightens everybody, was coming into the world. In fact, he was in the world and the world came into being through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to what was his own, but his own did not accept him. But to all who received, who believed in his name, which means trust in him, he gave the power to become the children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor the will of man, but of God. He says, trust me. When it doesn't look like it makes sense, trust me. When the doctor says 3 days, trust. When it doesn't look like the end of the month is coming and the bills are higher than the money, God says, trust me. Oh, I'd love for you to come tell that story again. Trust me with everything. Trust me. Let us pray. Lord, if there was something worthwhile that came out of these 25 minutes or so, let it be heard and let it take deep root. And Lord, provide what you need to do to make it grow. And Lord, if this foolishness that was shared this morning, just blow that away like chaff in the wind. But help all of us, Lord, each and every day, to trust you. When we get up in the morning not sure what the day's going to bring, to trust you. When we get up in the morning thinking we think we know what's going to happen today, help us trust you. And Lord, you provide as only you can. In Jesus' name, amen.